Good morning, good day, or good night. Thank you for joining us for this special podcast, Boards for Our Heroes. On this podcast, we would like to thank Josh Flath from For the 22, who made this possible in so many different ways. For the 22 is dedicated to ending veteran suicide by introducing veterans to the water on paddle boards. A huge thank you to Aaron Lugo for coming in as our special guest and agreeing to talk to us about his personal journey. I'm your host, Rob Bird, from Rob Bird's Moondog Saturday Morning Show, and I welcome you to the Country Paradise Studios in South Haven, Michigan. Here we go. Boards for Our Heroes.
Rob Bird's Moondog Saturday Morning Show.
How are you, Josh?
Doing great, man. Yourself?
I'm doing well. And Aaron Lugo, who was an Army specialist, who's here to share some stories on kind of how Josh has, with the boarding, the waterboarding, has done some great stuff to him. It is waterboarding, right? It's not the bad waterboarding, right? it's the good waterboarding. Tell me to start that off, Josh. What is For the 22 and, you know, what are you guys all about?
Man, I'll tell you, I was a Navy veteran, and while I was in, I found paddleboarding and surfing. And it really made a huge impact in my life, and seeing where that's taken me is just incredible. It literally changed everything. And it helped me through a lot of stuff. So after we got back to Michigan, I was like, man, let's still paddle up the coastline to raise awareness for veteran suicide. And we got hooked up with just some amazing people, and the ideas kept growing, and we ended up getting boards and started getting people in the water. And last year was our first year in operation. Yeah. And we ended up with over 350 people on the water.
Yeah. And last year, you made a trip up around the whole coast. And just quickly, well, you know, to recap that trip, you know, what did you do on your board? tell me so I get it right here. What is it?
So we started off in South Haven. Yep. And we ended up in Traverse City. And it was 270 plus miles, so 71 hours on the water altogether. Yeah, and we did that over 7 days.
That's just an amazing trip. Aaron, have you thought about making that trip yet?
I want to.
Let's do it next year.
You want to?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, make sure you get probably just a little bit closer to that mic. There we go. And so I guess to start this thing, you know, you brought Aaron in because you guys have made a connection as far as he's found water and he's found this and he's found you, and you've actually had a lot of therapy here. But Aaron, I guess just to give me a little background, when you start talking about, because this is a military thing for the 22, and you were an Army specialist when you left, and I guess tell me about your military background.
Well, I got in 2006 and went to basic in Fort Benning, Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was in there for a while, just National Guard, doing the weekend thing. So I was working, which was cool. Let me have a life outside.
All right.
And then in 2007, around Christmas, or right after Christmas, we ended up deploying to Iraq.
Yeah. And, you know, and for many people, you know, what were your initial thoughts when they said you're off to Iraq?
I was kind of excited. Wasn't too scared.
No.
I don't know. It was just the excitement got to me. While we were training, we had to train in Texas before we deployed, and you know, I was getting more of a feel for it, and I guess once I got a little more in country, I started feeling, you know, there is a chance that, you know, something can happen.
Mm-hmm.
But basically I signed on to be infantry.
Okay.
So this is what I wanted.
When you deployed, did you think you were ready?
Yeah, yeah, I had years, and my sergeants were really good. They had a lot of experience.
Okay. And, you know, I mean, that is, you know, really what going into the military is. I'm not a military man, never was. I know a bit about it. I like being able to bring these stories and be able to bring and help people to say, because, you know, really when it comes down to it,
that is one of the biggest therapy or a great therapy for people to know that there's other people who go through and have gone through the same thing. So, you know, with being in the military and going to Iraq, when we talked a little bit a while ago, you had said something to the effect that you didn't see or have any friends that were killed or seriously injured in front of you. You had more of a paranoia thing. Kind of tell me a little bit about that.
Well, in the beginning, when I first got there, I think it was like within a week, I was at home or I was in the barracks and a truck exploded while I was outside, but it was miles away and it was a dump truck. And I could feel the shockwave hit me. I was like, damn, if I can feel that, imagine if it's right next to me. And so I was a driver. I ended up, my squad ended up getting taken by a Marine colonel. And so we were driving him everywhere. So we were constantly out. And then after the first couple of days, you know, I was, you know, you're always worried about that one truck that's like right next to you.
Yeah.
And it's not so much of a fear of...
It would seem as a driver that every truck out in front of you or everything out in front of you is you're looking. I mean, it's the same as driving here, but now you're worried. Now, as a driver, you're looking for other things, too, not just where you're going. There's everything else. And you guys have spotters, too, right, who's also doing the same thing?
Yeah, it's the gunner, you know, got a really good view. So they're able to keep an eye out for, like, wires or... But... sucks because the bombs they put, they actually go out in the roads. So a way they do it is throughout the day, they'll dump gasoline on a certain spot.
Really?
And with the heat and the gas, it'll soften up the asphalt. So they dig it up and they plant a bomb in there and cover it up.
Wow.
So
I mean, and it really, I mean, and, okay, so, but a lot of them you can?
If they're just... what do you call it? Lazy about it? Yeah. They'll be, you know, and then there's always look out for trash because it's a shitty place and it's got a lot of trash right. everywhere. But if it looks, you know, like a nice
not,
pile.
Not normal shit trash. I mean, yeah. And I'm sure there's probably, you know, is that, do you learn that on hand or is that something that you're trained for? Or, I mean, they kind of give you ideas what to look for, but you really, it's, I mean, it's trial by fire.
Yeah. Basically, it's like, that pile is big enough to hold a bomb. So brace myself every time I pass something, you know, or...
And it doesn't take much to build a bomb either when you start talking about pipe bombs. And, I mean, they're small, and you start talking about pressure cooker bombs. I think are there. I don't know really what their tech was. So, but, yeah, it doesn't take much to hide a bomb.
They are really smart as far as making them, where they can use sensors like garage door openers or cell phones. And, you know, all they got to do is make a call. We did have some things that protect us as far as there was this jammer that was on our vehicle.
Okay.
And it sends out a signal that just blocks everything.
Drops all RF.
Yeah. People hated us driving by because they just dropped
right.
all their calls.
Right. Well, so be it. That's some pretty nice technology and that whole nother discussion. Because, I mean, that's actually, to me, I think that's really cool that you guys have the technology that would block. I mean, it's an EMA, really an EMF pulse, I would believe, that just blocks everything and knocks it out while you're going by.
Yeah, basically.
Wow. Well, I see where there's paranoia as a driver or really anybody. You're always taking that chance, just like police officers. I mean, no matter what you do, any kind of a stop. And even if you guys have to stop for anything, you always have the chance of a bomber, a suicide bomber walking up with a bomb under their jacket. So, I mean, I can see where that paranoia would be here. So, Josh, when we start talking about that paranoia and putting people on water, how does that help them?
Man, I tell you, it really puts you in the moment, makes you realize where you are. And it makes you really focus on that and just being there. Because I think there's not many things in life that make you do that anymore.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
And with all the politics, with everything that's going on, it kind of takes you away from that.
Yeah, I mean, everything right now is in the moment. I mean, not your moment as an existential thing. It's like it's right there. It's in your face, and it's blindingly in your face nowadays. You know, so, okay, so, you know, now you get people on water. I guess what Aaron brought you to Josh? Did you seek him out, or did you hear about Aaron? You know, how did you guys connect? maybe that's not a good question.
So we were at the Bronson Wellness Center. We were working out there during the off season. And we do weekly workouts there every Sunday. And we saw him several weeks and just kept talking to him. It's like, hey, man, come work out with us. And I was like, nah, I'm good. And then, geez, I think it was 2 months later, finally came worked out with us. Yeah. And it was like, hey, man, you want to go paddling? He's like, what the hell is that? I don't want to do that.
Was it you didn't want to work out because they worked out too hard or they didn't work out hard enough?
In the beginning when I saw him, that's actually when you asked me to paddleboard. He introduced himself and stuff like that. And I always used to think like paddleboarding, like I've seen old people do it and I'm just like, it's kind of lax. And
oh, thank you. You guys finally told me. I asked earlier, you never told me paddleboarding. I kept calling it waterboarding. You know,
I just thought it was funny.
See, to me, that's the COVID-19 haze. You get something in your head, and next thing you know, that's a, hey, you ever been waterboarded, guys? And actually, for you guys, that could be an extremely deep question, but thank God neither one of you have ever actually been waterboarded, right?
No.
I mean, it looks terrifying to me. So do they do that in the military at all, give you those experiences just in case you're ever captured or anything like that to harden you to any kind of an interrogation?
No, not in my case. I'm pretty sure with like more tactical teams like special forces, they'll go through that. But I was just infantry, so but they were just I don't know. They just said be as strong as you can.
Be as strong as you can. And did you know anybody who has been captured or anything like that? They didn't capture many, did they? They didn't take prisoners.
No, they actually, like, when I was overseas, they don't fight anymore, or they didn't fight with us. They would shoot some shots and then kind of disappear into the crowd.
How long were you there?
I was there for a year.
For a year. Yeah. What was it like coming home?
When I deployed, I had my first son. He was a year old. And then I came back, you know, after like 6 months, just for a little trip. And he was distant, you know?
Yeah. And you take your time. This is what we had talked about and going into those things that affect you. And, you know, when you start talking about whether it's PTSD or the military experience, it's not just what happened there. It's what happens when you come home. It's what predates going there. It takes the person that you are all those years, and now it brings you to the military, puts you in war. You see things. You're in positions where you're scared for your life every day. And now it changes your life, and it makes you someone who you're totally different. Like I said, I'm not a military man, but I can only guess this is what happens. Now it's time to come home, and people that you knew, you still know them, but you know them of who they were and who you were. And, you know, so it's a whole different context. And, you know, this is where the suicide is so prevalent, because coming home, it's who are you? Who am I? Where do we go? And from what I'm looking at in your eyes right now, that's what you felt.
Yeah, people look at you different. You know, they want to see the person before. And, you know, there's sympathy in their eyes, which is, you know, it kind of helps, but it's kind of like pity.
Yeah.
Which it kind of amplifies, like, yeah, I'm not the same person.
And you could see people look differently at you.
Yeah. And then slowly, it probably took about a year before it started really hitting me, because I didn't notice little things I did. When I got home, I was constantly looking out the window. It was just like reassurance, but I didn't notice it. But I'd go and I'd just look out the window.
What were you looking for?
I guess I was used to constantly keeping guard, constantly like, okay, it's clear outside.
Yeah.
And at first, I didn't really notice it. I'd just do it, and it was just
didn't know how to relax
kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then I started realizing that, man, I do that a lot, and I was trying to figure out why, and I was like, it made me feel better. Like, I wasn't paranoid, but Yeah, I guess it was just a tick I ended up getting, you know, a habit.
Yeah.
And
now you said you had a 1-year-old when you left, so now you've come back and he's a 2-year-old. You said son, right?
Yeah.
The mother, is she in your life?
No, she ended up taking off not long after deployment.
And so that's another. I mean, here you leave, and there you're in a situation where you can do nothing about it, and gone. So. Was that something that you were able to put beside you, or was that always in the back of your head while you were over there?
Well, she left right away. So then he was with my mom.
But okay.
Yeah, it's really stressful as far as there's nothing you can do about it because you're far away.
Yeah. At least you knew you had that safety of your mother.
Yes.
Taking care of him. You're really fighting a battle on a couple fronts here. You're fighting an emotional battle from home while you're there, and a battle when you come home, and probably really torn between two worlds. Josh, is that something that that you see and is pretty normal of people that come to you?
Yeah, it's a difficult situation a lot of people face. Coming back from the military, coming back from deployments can be a very difficult time. And sometimes it's hard to get out of that battlefield. Sometimes that battlefield is still raging in your head.
Okay. And hey, Aaron, and I try to do this because it makes people able to qualify it. If I was, say, on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 feeling great when you feel good on those good days, and 1 being a bad day, when you finally reached your lowest point after about a year or so of coming home, what number would you put on that?
Damn, I'd put it pretty low. It was mostly just anger, and I'd be at like a 3 or something. It was bad. Like, and then you just, at least me, I didn't care about people. I was over there. I seen some messed up things. I seen how bad people can get, and you know, kind of gave up on the human race. It was like, I don't care.
Yeah.
I don't. You know.
You probably gave up on yourself first. And then once you give up on yourself, then nobody else is worth it either. And, you know, so now when you look at that and you kind of look back at that and having some better days, hopefully here, and, you know, getting finding some different meaning. Were you suicidal by any chance? Did you think about taking your own life?
No, in the beginning, I was just mad. And if, you know, I would have outbursts and.
At people for little things.
Yeah. And then killing seemed so easy for me since people didn't matter. Their life didn't matter.
Do you have a, as a specialist, did you ever kill anybody?
No, I didn't.
Okay. And a lot of people probably wouldn't ask that question. I've been in these military conversations before, and they said, you don't ask a vet that. And what I have to, I don't think we give it any real seriousness if we don't ask that question. Because someone that does take the life of another for whatever reason, for your government and everything else, that has to play on you. Some men have taken a lot of lives. You know, and so, like I said, I don't think it's fair if you don't ask that question. So, but I certainly appreciate you answering it. So we're at a point where you were angry. You weren't thinking of suicide or anything like that. What eventually came to the point? I mean, when you meet these guys, to say, I am willing to be better, to not feel like this anymore.
It was a buildup of a bunch of things because after about a year, I ended up meeting my now ex-wife, and I was temperamental and stuff like that every once in a while, and she dealt with it, and it puts a giant toll on your family. Like me, I've learned to, hey, I can put up with it. I can tolerate anything. I can push myself. It doesn't matter. And then it wasn't until it starts impacting the family that it hurts. And a lot of suicide people, you know, a lot of people think that suicide is as far as like, oh, my God, I can't take it anymore. I'm, you know, and I've been bad to where I've been physically tired trying to hold myself up. And It's not. Hold on.
No. Hey, Josh, you take a breath over, man. This is not simple ha-ha funny stuff. This is deep stuff we're talking about. And sitting here with microphones in front of you with a person you've never met before. I know that you and Josh are close, but I'm a person you've never met before. So you're bearing your soul to me and whoever's going to listen to this. So I applaud you for that. And I think it makes you one of the bravest men that I've ever met.
Definitely.
Yeah. You know, but I'm going to give you just another second here. Go ahead and we'll take your mind off of it for a second. So, all right, for the 22, we kind of talked before we started this thing that you had, this is actually a program that you've got going on. It's Boards for Our Heroes. So I guess tell me a little bit about that and then kind of why this is a good thing for you. We'll get back to you, Aaron, in just a minute. So Okay. Tell me about Boards for Our Heroes.
So looking at the focus, looking at what this nonprofit has accomplished so far, and seeing the people get on the water, seeing the impact it made in their lives and their families' lives. It's been really neat taking them and their kids out on the water. That's been really neat. And then it's just like, how do we impact that even more so? Like, we have boards. But if they want to continue that, are they going to have to come out to our weekly paddles, monthly paddles, and meet up with us every time? How cool would it be if we could provide them a board for someone that it could literally change their life?
Yeah, for sure.
And that's kind of where the whole program started taking shape. And we looked at the impact it made in Aaron's life and taking him out in the water. And it was just like, man, I don't think we could find a better person.
Is there anybody else involved for the 22, any other foundations or anything involved with this movement?
So we have some sponsors and we do have a couple board shops that have reached out. And they want to sponsor the next board giveaway.
Well, then until they sponsor a board, we're not going to throw out their name. But if you've got any sponsors that you want to give a shout out to and say thank you, I'd love to hear it because it's always good to know who those people are out there that support causes like this.
So we got SurfTech and NSP. They were a huge factor in making this possible. Mick DeBoff with Maxim Surf, just an incredible man. And what he's made possible with this organization, we've never done it without him.
Okay. Aaron, back to you. So no, we're gonna dig out of that hole for just a second. Instead, here's what we're gonna say. Okay. You decide you're gonna get together with Josh and you're gonna go out on the water. And we talked a little bit about this too earlier. You had the fear of water.
Yeah.
Tell me about that because you have to get over that to be able to get on a board.
Oh yeah. So when I was in a deeper place though, down. They always connected because I used to fish and I'd be good around water. But every time I did try and commit suicide, it connected with water. I'd go and, basically drowning. And then he told me about paddleboarding because we were working out for a while. And he said I looked at him like he was crazy. But after a while, I couldn't wait to go get out.
I looked at him the same way when he said it to me before.
But this guy just radiates positivity. I don't know what it is about. You know, he's so.
No, he's a man who has seen things too and who has battled his own demons and knows the importance of putting that time in to help people battle theirs.
Oh yeah,
that's who Josh Flath is. At least to me, if anybody asked me who he is and what he does, that's how I would say. That's I mean, I'd say other than he's a great guy, he's handsome, got long hair, and all that good kind of stuff. I would say that's what the man is about.
Yes, and that's why I agreed to get on the water with him because I felt safe.
Yeah, and compelled, kind of compelled almost when he asked you that because he comes at you at a way that's very soft because, I mean, through a lot of things that you guys, and that don't mean he's a soft man. I can tell you that I'd probably still, I'm an old man. I don't want to tangle with him. But with that being said, he comes at you his demeanor is very caring when he talks to you. So you know to say, you know what, I'm going to listen right away because the last thing, especially a vet who or anybody who's going through a bunch of crap wants someone in their face telling them how wrong they are. You know, so he says, hey, I've got something for you to try. You're pretty much, you're scared of water. What got you out of the water?
It was him and I'm constantly trying to conquer my fears. I'm arachnophobic, so I'm trying to beat that. So I was like, I could beat this, you know. And
well, I'll take you out to the garage after we're done. One fear at a time. Okay.
But yeah, I put my faith in him, and man, as soon as I got out on the water, it was relaxing, and
I get it. Yeah, just I get it. I haven't been a paddle boarder, but being from South Haven, Michigan, I've been on the water plenty of times. I've been a snowmobiler, went up to the top of the mountains in the middle of winter and 18 feet of snow, and it's that same type of thing. You know, you found something where you sit there and say, there's so many things that are bigger than me. And when you stand there realizing that what's going on with you is really a small thing compared to about the world and how beautiful it is, how evil, good, all those things, what it actually is, it really makes you know that you're small. And, you know, and so when you start realizing that, that starts with your health. And I am not any kind of a doctor or anything like that that knows, but just knows that when you feel good and you do something that you like, that carries with you for a long time.
Yeah, it does. That right there really nails what the focus for the 22 is. It's not always about paddleboarding. It's not always that, because that's not the thing for everybody. Like you said, your snowmobiles, being on the mountain, realizing that this is so much bigger than me.
Mm-hmm.
That feeling, being in the nature, that's where it's at.
Yeah, I goosebumps talking about this. And
whether that's music, whether that's paddleboarding, whether that's whatever. You need to do what you love.
Yeah.
That's important.
Absolutely.
That self-care is huge.
So for you guys, a lot of this this healing is centered around water. How do you feel when you get up on that paddleboard? What does it make you feel like?
Well, first I had to focus. All my focus went into not falling in.
A great distraction when you're worried about not falling and you're not thinking about all the rest of the crap that's going on.
And then... you know, since I was out of the military, we kind of say we're going to hang out. We talk a little bit, but we kind of break contact. We go our separate ways, no matter how close we are. And, you know, hanging out with Josh and then every other veteran that joined, I felt that brotherhood again. So I think that's another thing that got me out on the water. I was like, you know, felt that family again.
And that's one of the most positive experiences of whether it's the military or being on a team or in a group. It's that camaraderie of people, of like-minded people that have been through some like experiences, some more than others, some better than others, but they all have their own take on that. And when you get together with those people, that's an incredibly powerful thing. Yeah. I don't know if there. Do I have to come up with another question, or was that just so profound that you know? No,
yeah,
seriously.
I think that community is really where it's at.
Yeah.
And without our paddle community, without the people that have really volunteered and came out and taught our veterans, and just being there with them, I think is the main thing.
I say that about everything. I said because there's a million great organizations out there in this world. But it's not the organization, it's not the bricks and mortar, it's not the pretty colors of their logo. It's the people that are part of their organization and the people that they are servicing. And when you have that, and then people that you care about who have been through those experiences, I gotta believe that it has to be, you know, I remember it from, you know, church camp when I was kids, when you have that inspiring moment at the end of camp when they have the candlelight vigil and all that kind of stuff. It's that same feeling. It's that feeling of peace when you get done doing it. And how far does that carry you when you've had a great day and you're on the water, you got to be with your friends and people you're becoming closer with? I mean, just what does that do for you after it's over?
Well, it's awesome. The surf community is awesome. They are so nice. You know, you don't get the bad looks every once in a while, you know, just for the way you are, dressed or whatever. That, you know, you pass by and you see people. Or you go to anywhere and there's always that couple of few people that, you know, have an attitude. I have never run across a negative person in this whole community. And then after the paddle, you know, just lingering around and... it's like being at a family cookout, you know, just relax. You have family, friends there.
People laughing,
yep.
Joking around. Yeah.
It's just a great feeling after, you know, just messing around on the water.
Josh, well, I mean, what do you say to someone that may be listening to this and saying, you know, I like the water, you know, where should they go? Who should they call if they want to investigate a little bit more?
For the 22.life, and we're on Facebook as well. We would absolutely love to take you out. My number is 808-779-1148. Feel free to reach out anytime. And you can reach out to anyone that we battle with, anybody in stand-up, paddle, and surf communities. And
everybody does whatever they're going to do for the first time sometime.
Yes, you know? They do.
And that's one of the things that people worry, well, I don't have balance, or I've never done it before. Well, you know what, Josh, is the first time you did it before. Aaron, the first time you did it before. If I ever do it, there will be a first time that I do it. You know, so that scares people, though.
I think we should live stream that.
We should make this happen. Yeah, that'll be a very long Ethernet cable to get us out into the water. Or we can hotspot it and take the risk of your phone, I suppose, which I know you've taken the risk with your phone many a times, especially on your trip up the coast. But and you can go ahead and anybody go back to find the podcast of that if you want, because we did talk about that before. So, you know, what anything, Aaron, what would say to somebody, you know, Josh runs the organization for the 22. How many members do you have now?
We have nine board members.
Nine board members. And what is that, just is everybody a board member, or how many people are coming in and boarding on?
So we've been doing a lot of weekly events, and we've had 10, 15, 20 people coming out.
Okay.
They've been pretty small this year with COVID. We've had to kind of scale things down, have the same person on the same boards and so on.
Okay. Has it been a lot of the same people coming, or have you been getting a nice variety? Or
we've had a nice variety.
Okay.
Yeah.
Aaron, do we want to go back into that deep stuff again? Or are we pretty happy we've come out of that? We took you down there, and I think, I commend you 100% to be able to tell those stories, to be able to share it with us. I know we got a nice cozy room here, so hopefully that makes it a little bit easier. But,
being able
to bare your soul that way to anybody, whether it's just a one-on-one conversation, is hopefully it will be helpful to you, too, to get that story out. And I'm sure this will be helpful to other veterans.
Yeah, that's why I'm not afraid to, you know, push it, because I really want people to know that, hey, you know, you're down and you feel like you're not going to get out of there, because that was just one time, one attempt kind of. So, I was on a boat with some friends and then one was kind of just floating off because he had a life jacket, you know? And I was like, well, he's not that far away. So, they were like, just take a rope, you know? So I grabbed a rope and I swam out, and about halfway through, the rope went out, you know, it just ran out, and I was tired. You know, I was tired as hell. So I kind of just gave up and just started sinking. And, you know, the screensavers that show the water with the sunlight coming through?
Yeah.
I saw that. And I was just fine with it. I was like, I'm tired of fighting. You know, I'm just tired. So, but then I thought, I was like, you know, humans, animals, everybody, they fight to survive no matter what, you know? So I was like, now what the hell, you know? And it wasn't like I want to live, but just like I don't want to quit. So, you know, I came back up, you know, everything turned out fine, but then that just kind of lingered, that I just gave up. And hold on one second.
We were talking about that, and we're going to talk a little bit more and go on a little bit further. But and you were out with friends, right? Is that what you said?
Yeah.
And you just decided you'd jump off the boat to go help someone else, and halfway out there just say, I'm done and this is it.
Yeah.
What a time to make that decision. You know, to me, I'm always thinking the person who's sitting in the room by themselves and decide that this is just enough, and they find their way to do it. Not I'm hanging out with friends, having a good time, and this is it.
Yeah, it comes out of nowhere. You know, a lot of people think that, yeah, they'll be depressed, or people that are constantly posting, you know, I'm depressed, feeling depressed, or talking about suicide. Yeah, it's like a small percentage of them are considering it, but it's the ones that are quiet, the ones that don't want to tell you, because they at least I didn't completely believe it myself. I was just like, yeah, I feel depressed, but I never thought suicide. But then you get those one times where you're down, and the thing that pushed it the most was alcohol with me.
Were you drinking that day?
And I'm okay. Lightweight. Yeah, all so, right. But I just had like one beer and it's kind of the whole inhibitor, right? I think that's the word. It kind of takes away all the fight that I have left or it did. And
usually so it uninhibits you and not actually turns. Well, no, it affects differently. Usually people get uninhibited when they drink, but it actually inhibited you and sucked you in and brought you to a bad place. Yeah. It is actually a depressant. You know, most people, when you start drinking, that's not how you feel right away, but it's kind of that prolonged, you know, which makes it a depressant that, you know, how many times did you try?
Three, I believe.
Three. Okay. And, you know, and I do have to say that that's a great thing that you actually were not good at.
Yeah.
You know, we all try to be the best at whatever we do in our life. And I have to say, I'm so glad to see you here that you were not good at that. Did someone pull you out of the water? Or did you pull yourself out of the water?
The first time my ex called her cousin and her cousin's husband, which was my friends. And they went and got me. The second time I was actually with her cousin, my friend, on the boat. And the third time, something else, as far as she was worried, or she was trying to get to me, and she was upset, and she hung up. And it kind of sounded, because she yelled, it sounded like something happened to them. And it pulled me out of it, because that's my concern for them, you know? Because mainly the times I've wanted to do it is because all the pressure it puts on my family, all the stress, you know, I'm yelling at them for no reason sometimes. Or
you feel guilty for the way you are treating people.
Yeah, it's like they are better off without me because I ended up giving her secondary PTSD as far as, you know, it's a real thing as far as she's learned.
Absolutely. Well, whatever you do will affect them no matter what.
Yeah, she learned to read me because I had anxiety attacks. And it's just like it's cold sweat, and or at least in my case, and you know, a little bit of hard to breathe. And she would watch me in the stores constantly, or anywhere, and she'd see, and she's like, "Okay, it's time to go." And I wouldn't even know. That's another thing that upset me, is losing like Alzheimer's. You know, you don't know yourself anymore.
Yeah. You don't recognize yourself. Yeah. Who's that man in the mirror?
I'm not getting mad. I don't even know I'm getting mad. I don't know I'm having an attack until it's too late. And like, so yeah, that ended up impacting her a lot as far as she has anxiety now, just because of the whole, she needs to leave when I freak out. So then she kind of trained herself to do the same thing.
It'll transfer to them. You know, Josh, when I see here and look and see the pain in Aaron's eyes, I certainly understand the reason why you're doing what you're doing. And I see it in yours, too. You know, we've talked many times about this stuff, and I said your manner is very soft-spoken, but I can see it. But I also see the happiness in your face when we're talking to Aaron, and you can see his pain coming out, and you can see that what you're doing with him is actually some great therapy for him and making a difference in his life. So I see those things, and I see it in you too, Aaron. And it just I'm so glad that I didn't ever get put through that situation as far as through the military. We've all seen things or done things that have caused us some of those same reactions to we can't believe how we treated other people, quick to a temper. And of course, that has stuff to do with not just being in the military or PTSD. That has to do with being young. Even as youngsters, we're a little quicker to our tempers. We see that happening now in the days that we live in. But Josh, I think this is kind of, I think we hit this pretty well. And, you know, we're looking at a nice little podcast here, and hopefully it helps. You got something else?
I did want to add one more thing as far as, you know, I was really moved when he offered me the board. You know, we were just paddling, and I was telling him I wanted to buy a board. And then he told me while we were out in the water, and it kind of felt like I freaking want a house or something. And then he put the For the 22 logo on it and Board for the Heroes. And
acts of kindness do feel that way. Yeah.
Yeah. And we were at a race up in Traverse City, I believe, and the water was like hard. And I kept falling off, and man, it was hard. So I was about ready to call it because I was like, shit, I can't even stand on the board. And I saw the, So I saw the decal, you know, on my board. And I was like, damn it. I was like, I can't give up again. So, yeah, I ended up finishing that race. You know? But yeah, that's it.
And I'll tell you, Aaron, you're one of the strongest people I know.
Yeah.
The most inspirational people that I've ever met.
It's very brave to sit here and,
yeah, it is.
And put this out.
Yeah, I really wanted to get it out just so, you know, people know. I want to do what Josh is doing, you know, raise awareness.
Well, through me and doing what we're doing, we can kind of do just that. So any last sentiments here, Josh? Any last thing that we can move on? Make sure there's the board for our heroes. What's the way to get a hold of you again if someone wants to?
ForThe22.life. We're on Facebook. You can call me 808-779-1148. And again, Aaron, thanks for coming
Aaron Lugo,
on,
thank you.
Thanks for sharing the story.
Man. Yeah, this was awesome.
Huge, most inspirational story I know, man. And I think it'll make a huge impact in a lot of people's lives. Yeah. So if you're struggling with that, please feel free to reach out to us at ForThe22.
And Josh, say that five times fast. I actually made that mistake on purpose because I can say that joke because you can't say Josh Flath five times fast. I think it's pretty much impossible. ForThe22. All right, with that said, we can leave this podcast that went deep. We had some laughs, and we can leave it on a laugh too. So, thank you so much, guys, and you know, keep the spirit up and smile when you're on that board. Enjoy those sunsets, the water, and everything you can about being there, because this is one of the sweetest lives we can have around here. So, yeah. With that being said, at any time, you can always call Rob Bird at the Rob Bird's Moondog Saturday Morning Show at 269-872-3049. Or if you have any questions, whatever, and ever need to get a hold of Josh, too, and because you don't know how to use Google or do a search, you can always reach out to me, too. So thank you, fellas.
Awesome. Well, thanks for again, Rob.
Till next time.
And we appreciate all you're doing for our veteran and first responder community.
Well, I appreciate it. It's the least I can do. With that being said, have a great day, guys.
As we refresh our memories of all the wars gone by, let each of us be grateful for all our heroes, you and I. They gave their all that we may live in a country good and free. Lest we forget, they did it all for the likes of you and me. Remember the heroes. Lest we forget. Lest we forget. Lest we forget they kept our glory. Most
gave their utmost and saved us all from dying.
And I'd like to take the opportunity to invite you to listen to the Dale Robbie Band. Join guitar virtuoso James Schneider, harmonica legend Danny Donuts, harmonica newcomer Mason Dixon and with the Spoons and Washboard, and Kevin Turner from Trixie Tang. All vocals, drums, percussion, and keyboards by me, Dale Robbie. Every song is written by my good friend Rob Bird.
The black crow flies away.
Recorded and mastered by Rob at the Country Paradise Studios, the debut album The Black Crow Flies Away has a little of everything.
Flying towards the dream we share, screeching echoes in the air.
Country, blues, rock and roll, an Americana tradition all wrapped into one album.
In my life I made fun of a million country songs, but now I'll take time to write one for you.
The Crossroads of Tomorrow takes a look at the darker side of the world and is a bit heavier than The Black Crow Flies Away.
The Crossroads of Tomorrow, looking back at yesterday, a search for a new future.
Stream both of these and any new music put out by the Dale Robbie Band on Spotify or anywhere else you like to stream music.
I wrote three songs before noon today. It's something I do when I'm alone.
If you are so inclined to purchase one of these albums or both, a great place to find them is on Amazon Music or iTunes. A purchase goes a long way into feeding an almost starving musician. Feel free to put on Spotify and hit repeat. Sends me pennies to my account. From me, Dale Robbie, and the rest of the band, check out the Dale Robbie Band and have an awesome life and make music every day. Of the Moondog Radio Network, a division of Moondog Productions. Copyright 2020.